In this portion of the program, I would like to share with you how nonviolent communication can contribute to our attempts to bring about change. Change within ourselves, change in people whose behavior is not in harmony with our values, and change in the structures that we're living within. Earlier, I've outlined the purpose of nonviolent communication: to create a connection that allows compassionate giving to take place. And I clarified the basic literacy that's necessary to live in this way, which is a literacy of feelings, needs, requests, how to express them in a way that is a gift to other people. They can see what's alive in us, they can see what would make life more wonderful, and that's a gift because then it gives them a chance to willingly contribute to our well-being. And that talked about how through empathic connection we can receive that gift from other people, even when they're using a language which is quite violent. Now let's look at how nonviolent communication can contribute to change. We want people to change not because of fear that we're going to punish them if they don't, or guilt them if they don't. We want them to change because they see better ways of meeting their needs at less cost. So let's look at how that change can occur within ourselves, with other people whose behavior is not in harmony with our values, and with social structures that are behaving in ways that are not in harmony with our values. First, ourselves. Think of a mistake you made recently, something you did that you wished you hadn't done. Then think of how do you educate yourself when you have done something that you wished you hadn't done. That is, what did you tell yourself at the moment that you saw what you had done? The other day I was doing a training with some people, and we were seeing how nonviolent communication can be used within ourselves to learn from our limitations without losing self-respect. And a woman picked a situation that she had been screaming at her child that morning before coming to the training. She said some things to the child that she wished she hadn't done, and she saw the look in the child's eyes, and she saw how hurt the child looked. And I asked her this question: how did you educate yourself at that moment? What did you say to yourself? And she said, I said what a terrible mother I am. I said to myself, I shouldn't have talked that way to the child. I said, what's wrong with me? Unfortunately, that's how many people educate themselves. They educate themselves in the way that people educated us when we did things that authorities didn't like. They blamed us, punished us, so we internalize that. So now we often educate ourselves through guilt, shame, and other forms of violent, coercive tactics. So we know we're doing that. We know that we are educating ourselves in a violent way. Three feelings will tell us that: depression, guilt, and shame. You see, I think we feel depressed a good deal of the time, not because it means we're ill or something is wrong with us, but because we have been taught to educate ourselves with moralistic judgments, to blame ourselves, to think like this mother did, that because she had screamed at her child, that there was something wrong with her. She was a bad mother. Incidentally, I often tell people, if you want to know my definition of hell, it's have children and think there is such a thing as a good parent. You'll spend a good deal of your life being depressed because it's a hard job, it's an important job, and we're going to do things repeatedly we wish we hadn't done. So we need to learn, but without hating ourselves. Because learning that occurs through guilt or shame is costly learning. It's too late now to undo that learning. We have it within ourselves. We've been trained to educate ourselves with these kind of violent judgments. So we show people in our training how, when you are talking to yourself like that, to bring those judgments out into the light, to see what you're telling yourself. to see that this is your way of educating yourself, to call yourself names, to think of what's wrong with you. Then when you see that, we show them how to look behind these judgments to the need which is at the root of them. That is, what need of yours wasn't met by the behavior? And I asked this mother that. What need of yours was not met by how you talked to the child? And with a little help from me, she got in touch with the need. She says, Marshall, I have a real need to respect people, especially my children. Talking to my child that way didn't meet my need for respect. And I say, now that your attention is on your needs, how do you feel? She says, I'm sad. I say, how does that sadness feel compared to what you were thinking a few moments ago when you were thinking that you're a terrible mother and that other judgments that you were making of yourself? She says, it's almost like a sweet pain now. Yes, because it's a natural pain, you see. To be in touch with needs of ours that weren't met by our behavior, I call that mourning our actions. But mourning without blaming ourselves, mourning without thinking there's something wrong with us for doing what we did. And when I help people to get to that connection, they often describe the pain in a similar way that she does. It's almost like a sweet pain compared to the depression, the guilt, the shame we feel when we are educating ourselves through blame and judgments. I then ask her to look at the good reasons why she did what she did. She says, huh? I say, let's look at the good reasons you did what you did. I don't understand what you mean. You mean screaming at the child the way I did? What do you mean by good reason? I say, it's important for us to be conscious that we never do anything except for good reasons. I don't think any human being does anything except for good reasons. And what are those good reasons? To meet a need. Everything we do is in the service of needs. So I said, what need were you trying to meet when you talked to the child that way? She said, are you saying it was right? I'm not saying it was right to talk to the child that way. I'm not saying it was wrong. I'm suggesting that we learn to look at the needs we're trying to meet by doing what we did. We can learn best from it if we do two things. First, see the need that wasn't met by the behavior. And next, to be conscious of the need we were trying to meet by doing what we did. When we have our consciousness on those two needs, I believe it heightens our ability to learn from our limitations without losing self-respect. So, what was your need that we were trying to meet by saying what you did to the child at that time? Well, she says, Marshall, I really have a need for the child to be protected in life, and if this child doesn't learn how to do things differently, I'm really scared of what could happen to them. Yes. So, you really have a need for your child's well-being, and you were trying to contribute to it. But she says, that's a terrible way to do it, to scream like that. Well, we've already looked at that part of yourself that doesn't like what you did. It didn't meet your need to respect other people. But now let's be conscious of what need of yours was met by doing it. You care for the child. You wanted to protect the child's well-being. Yes. I believe we have a much better chance to learn how to handle other situations in the future if we ask ourselves, how could I have met both needs? Like now, when you have those two needs in mind, can you imagine how you might have expressed yourself differently? She said, oh, yes, yes, I can see that if I had been in touch with those needs, I would have expressed myself quite differently.